Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. It is our Author of the Week segment of the week, of course, where we do speak with an author about one of his or her latest books. Our Author of the Week segment is always sponsored by the good people at ABC Books on North Glenstone, where you can find this book and any of the past Author of the Week books. And if you happen to miss any of this episode or you want to share it online, of course, we'll have it on our on-demand section at KSGF.com and the KSGF app. This week, we are talking with James Tooley, senior fellow at the Independent Institute and author of Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High Caliber, Low Cost Education. And the timing of this is great, right? Of course, here in the United States. And I should note for listeners, we are talking to James Tooley over in England. Here in the United States, we've been dealing with all sorts of COVID-related shutdowns of schools. People, particularly in the Springfield area, have been questioning whether or not public schools are the right place for kids. Many of them, the answer being homeschooling, because private schools just aren't as prevalent or affordable as they can afford themselves. And that's one of the reasons I thought this book was so timely and so perfect. And I appreciate you being with us this morning. And if you would, tell us what prompted you to write Really Good Schools.
Thank you. Yes, it's good to be with you. I mean, in a way, Really Good Schools is a summary of my work for the last 20-odd years. And the work started in developing countries, in sub-Saharan Africa, in South Asia in particular, but also in Central America. And I stumbled across this extraordinary phenomenon of low-cost private schools in the Global South, as it's called. And this is not just a small-scale phenomenon, it's a massive phenomenon. 70, 75, 80% of poor kids in the slum, in poor areas of Lagos, Nigeria, Monrovia, Liberia, Kampala, Uganda, they use these low-cost private schools. It's an extraordinary phenomenon. And I spent 20 years cataloging, researching, developing, working in these countries, in these schools, and so on. So that's in a sense the first part of the book explores that phenomenon and shows how what's not to like about it. You know, that the private sector can come in and really help the poorest kids on this planet. And then the book sort of takes a turn and says, could any of this be applicable to America? It's published in America, but also, of course, by implication to England, where I'm speaking. I'm the Vice Chancellor of the University of Buckingham and other sort of particularly Anglophone nations around the world. And the answer, I started thinking and exploring, well, you know, maybe it could. So that's where the book ends. Maybe this phenomenon of low-cost private education, particularly, as you say, after a year and a more, nearly 2 years now, isn't it, of lockdowns and crisis where people are having second thoughts about what you call public education, state education, this book is timely. But that's the process. From 20 years looking at this phenomenon around the world, coming around and saying, could this be applicable to America, to England? And the answer is a tentative yes.
As most people, I think, at least here in the States, observe the private school situation across the globe, it seems counter to the conventional wisdom, whereas we think, well, private schools are for the wealthy. And as you found in your research here, is that, well, that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And how many of the areas of the world that generally as Americans we think of being poorer nations, sub-Saharan Africa, yet probably 74 million students are in low-cost private schools there. So that sort of contrary to our ideas, which I guess would lead me to what you found is our hang-up, if you will, here regarding private schools. Why is something that is so seemingly better in terms of outcome and achievably not cost prohibitive, yet still something that here in the States, it's just not happening?
Yeah, so there could be a range of reasons. I mean, one is that the state schools, the public schools in America might not be as bad as the ones you see in Nigeria or India. So that's a possibility. So whereas there, you know, parents perhaps are pushed harder by the state, the parlous state of public education, perhaps in America, for many, it's not as bad. That's a possibility. A second is maybe public education is too successful in that it makes people think it is indispensable. So you've only, you know, you mustn't start thinking outside of the public education box, because this is the only show in town. It should be the only show in town. And following on from that, of course, you have got things like charter schools. You have got things like voucher programs and, you know, some tax credits and all the rest of it. You've got various programs working within the public system, particularly charter schools, which, you know, take 5 or 6% of kids, I think, something like that. And so maybe you've got a channel for those who don't, you know, like the existing public schools, who, you know, would in other countries resist them and then start sending children to private schools. In America, you've got the charter schools, which sort of take a little bit of the edge off the problem, if you like. So it could be those reasons, and it could well be that people have just, you know, take it for granted that the public system should be involved in education. There's been 150 or whatever years of, if you like, and this is perhaps overstating it, but indoctrination by the public system, that's the only possible way forward. And that's what's been interesting over the last couple of years, isn't it? A year, you know, since the COVID lockdown started, people have been saying, well, actually, the only show in town is not doing very well for my kids. The private schools are doing much better. Research shows that, in fact. And also there are other options, like homeschooling and these hybrid models where, you know, homeschoolers get together with others and create sort of mini schools and so on. But and the one other possibility, and this is in Africa, you know, in the countries I'm working in Nigeria, say, there must have at some point been the first educational entrepreneur to come along. Maybe it happens spontaneously in different parts of the country. But nevertheless, there is a first set of entrepreneurs to come along and say, oh, hang on, people don't like the public schools. Let's try a private school, see if something happens. And it's possible that America is just waiting for that first entrepreneur to come in, that England is just waiting for the first person to say, okay, I want to try this. And if that person is successful, proves the model, others will come in the market. And before you know it, perhaps you will have this very low-cost private education serving most people rather than just the sort of elite as we know private schools today.
We're talking with our author of the week, James Tooley, senior fellow at the Independent Institute. He's the author of Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High Caliber, Low Cost Education. I know you found that there were a number of different categories of which schooling should be judged. You had 7 of those. It sounds like that is pretty consistent. Is that the key to what is making the private schools superior, and why do you not find that those are adopted when it comes to the public school option?
The reason why private schools are better, and those 7 categories, and say, in a way, are sort of outcomes. They're higher quality, better value for money, better efficiency, better equity, you know, fairness, and so on. So those outcomes, but why are they better? And, you know, that seems to be accountability, doesn't it? Now, in the countries that I've been working in around the world, it's almost impossible to fire a teacher. I guess the teacher unions are strong in America, too,
yes.
And that's also a problem there. So however little teaching a teacher does, you can't fire the person, and so, you know, you're left with you know, the mediocrity continuing. In a private school, a teacher doesn't teach, a teacher doesn't turn up, a teacher beats the kids, and that teacher is fired, you know, pretty much as quickly as I've said it there, or at least perhaps given one more chance, but then removed. And that accountability, parents are paying fees, they won't pay fees to schools where they get any sense the children are being abandoned or neglected. Those are words that they use about the public schools. Our children are abandoned in those schools, and that's why they're willing to pay some fees, which are, they're small in absolute terms, but mean a lot to those parents, and they will only pay those fees if the school is satisfying them that their children are being educated. So I think it's that accountability of teachers to the school, to perform properly because the school depends on parents paying their fees and can only survive if the parents are satisfied. So I think accountability is a really important point.
Final question for James Tooley, our author of the week. What is the reception of your research and your findings as you spread this wealth of information? Do you have much of an audience with the public schools? Is there some reception there? What is that like?
So with the public schools and with governments, it's not a hearty applause, shall we say, for what I've written. But from entrepreneurs, from people concerned with education, from business people, investors, there's a lot of interest. And, the people are interested in perhaps seeing if they can open low-cost or affordable private schools here. I created one in the north of England, a city called Durham, near Newcastle. So I've got a working model of how it's possible to do here. People are interested in that, and people are emulating that. And in the work I've been doing over the last 20 years in developing countries, it's had huge impact. You've had people coming in as investors, as philanthropists, as donors, as creators of loan schemes and scholarship funds and chains of schools and federations. A lot of work has been going on. So it's had huge impact around the world. I'm beginning to see in America and Britain now, people are saying, yeah, this is interesting, particularly, as you say, after a year and a half of lockdowns and so on, people are saying, is there an alternative to public education? There seems to be. Let's give it a try. Let's give it a try.
Our author of the week again, James Tooley, senior fellow at the Independent Institute and author of Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High Caliber, Low Cost Education. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
It's been my pleasure, Nick. Thank you.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.